Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Own the John Deere compact tractor you've always wanted. Now with 0% financing on all 1 through 4 series models at Ag Up Equipment. Visit agup.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2026. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Let's get to work. Been one of those weeks where you just kind of been on top of the horse, so to speak, riding it. And you walk out the door and you get hit with that Arctic breeze of like 20 degrees with a 35 mile an hour wind. Buddy, it is cold. Now, the birds out in the courtyard, they're, you know, I've seen a couple of new nests. I wanted to ask you about that. I didn't notice them about a week ago, but they've been apparently pretty busy out there.
Yes, it's getting to be that time.
Yeah, Hawk's glad to see them. It's been the last few weeks. He comes with me on Saturdays, and usually there's not a lot of birds in the courtyard. But today, there's a bunch of little birds everywhere, and my curiosity's kind of peaked. Why is that the case today and not...
That courtyard is surrounded by building. Mm-hmm. There's ambient heat there. That ambient heat and that break from the wind is a beautiful place for a bird to stay out of the cold.
Makes total sense.
They're going to find every little niche they can to stay out of that cold, to stay out of the wind. And that's part of what we're going to talk about this morning, how to protect your feathered friends in your yard and take care of them. There's so many things that you can do. One of them is to start by utilizing a really high fat content oil feed. We're talking specifically about black oil sunflower. A lot of you love to use the no-mess blends that are, you know, no hull on them, just the meat of the nut itself. Black oil sunflower is probably the best way to go right now. But, of course, I would get that no-mess without the seed on it. You get a lot more for your money that way. The bag seems more expensive, but you get a lot more money if you're paying for seed that doesn't have the shells on it. So check that out the next time you go to your favorite birding specialty shop and see if you can rack up some black oil sunflower seed. Help these guys out. They are really cold out there. They need a lot of fat in their diet. And black oil, of course, we all know that oil is a liquid form of fat. They need that in their diet right now, and that's what's going to help them out the most. That and provide some shelter. We had some tree damage at our place, Lance, with well, we didn't have a lot of tree damage. We had wire damage from trees at our place. And Entergy came out. They were our first responder heroes, came out and got us power back after about 24 hours. I think it was 23 hours that we were without power. But they dropped the branches right there in the yard and said they'd get back to pick them up later. They had, you know, way too much going on. And I had a tree guy come out. I had been trying to get estimates for weeks, even before the storm. Had a tree guy came out and gave me an estimate. He said, now, I can save you some money if I just pile it up at the back of your yard. And I said, do that. I'd rather have that anyway, because that's a great place. Folks, if you've got an area in the back of your yard that you can just leave stuff back there, branches and chunks of wood, and I tell you what, old Christmas trees. I hate to see people putting their Christmas trees on the garbage pile. That just drives me nuts. Throw your old Christmas tree out back. Those needles will stay on there even dead for a long time, and that'll provide a lot of shelter. I used to go around when I had a pickup truck years ago. I used to go driving up and down the neighborhoods looking for, real, not artificial Christmas trees, real Christmas trees to pick up, throw in the back of my truck, and carry to my backyard, and I'd throw them in the back of the yard. And that's a great thing to do to help out your songbirds, especially right now. They are just needing so much cover, and there's a lot of their cover has been broken and brittle and just not out there right now. So do something with those cuttings. And if you've got a crew coming to your house, ask them if it's okay if they just put it in the back of the yard and see if that'll save you a few dollars, because it's going to save me several hundred dollars in removal costs, because they're going to cut all the stuff down. It's going to be branches anyway, and I've got a nice barbed wire fence along the back of my property that's separating me and the acres behind me. There are houses back there as well, and everything that they cut down is going to go along that back fence line, and I'm going to allow it to just set up and provide wonderful habitat for the birds. The other thing that can be done right now, of course, is water. And that is something that is at a premium for birds. They've got to have water every day. And it's hard for them to find fresh water in this frozen habitat. The combination of insect-eating birds needing to find insects, one of the reasons they fly south, a lot of birds also have to have water. That's why ducks come so far down here into the south in the wintertime. They've got to hunt in unfrozen water. They've got to be able to swim around and dabble and find food underwater, and it's just not hard, not easy for them to do that when everything is frozen over.
Well, I was answering the phone there with our guest coming in, but when you start talking about birds and habitat and all that, it starts kind of peeking up my bird dog in here. He's my Saturday partner. He will not let me leave. I don't care what the weather is or what time of day. He's got to be here on Saturday. It's funny. Animals have such unique brains.
Yes, they do.
They'll say bird brain. You know, you got a bird brain. Well, I can tell you what, birds are smart.
Yes, they are.
They know when he's around. And they know he's a bird dog, and he goes to every tree out there. He'll climb as high as he can in them, and those birds just sit there and look at him like, we know we're not supposed to get in your mouth.
Yeah.
But he's had such fun with everything's kind of waking up a little. I don't know, the last month, the birds just haven't been around. I did exactly what you suggested when we had tree work done in the summer. They did come in, and it was one of those things where a lot of people across the state are probably asking this question. Oh, what do we do if it's the neighbor's trees? And well, we covered that a good bit this week if you have those types of things. But let's say it's you got raw land behind you. And it's, say, a big piece of land, and there's a landlord that may live in Virginia. And you've had tree damage back there, and it looks like dead pines and all that, and they're going to fall or whatever it may be. Generally, you just need to get in touch with the landlord or the landowner, make sure you have some pictures of those trees,
right,
and let them know that they're dead. So once they're dead, it becomes their problem. If they're live, it's kind of a different thing. But back in the summer when we had all the pine damage and the crews were going around chopping those pines, got in touch with the landowner, said, hey, you know, these are some 100-foot tall pines and they're going to fall. So he had them cut, and they said, hey, you know, it'll be cheaper if we just left it laying. Well, he said, sure, leave it laying. I'm like, that's exactly what I want. And it looked like a bomb had gone off for a while.
Well, of course it did.
But then eventually, you know, it starts settling, and I had a crew come in and kind of push stuff back and create some berms. And with all that, and I planted a bunch of ryegrass, threw out a bunch of corn and seed, and the birds have loved it.
Absolutely.
They've absolutely loved it, man, the habitat. I've got possums and raccoons and birds and deer everywhere, whereas, say, a year ago, I did not have that. Even though it was a beautiful and serene wooded spot with a creek running through it, you just never really saw the wildlife. But what you just said, man, it changed it completely. For if you enjoy watching wildlife, man, I can sit on my back porch constantly, and there's always foxes. Everything's going
absolutely
on, you know? But it did. It did change the way things work, you know. And that was a good point.
We have these ideas about well-manicured lawns that drive me literally up the wall. One of the things that I don't enjoy is seeing and please understand, I'm not saying anything about any of my neighbors. I have probably the most beautiful yard right next door to me. They love to have the leaves off of their yard, and that's fine for them. I love leaving my leaves all winter long, and I have people stop and offer to clean my yard for me, and I say, no, I want it that way. Wildlife need those leaves in your yard. Trees and things of that sort are going to be healthier when all those leaves can break down and add to the soil. So that's something that we all have to think about is – what we are going to put out there. A well-manicured lawn, to me, it can be beautiful, but so can a lawn that is just cluttered with all kinds of – and I'm not talking about your front yard that you put out to the street. I'm talking about your backyard. Let it go. Let it go. Yes, if you want a nice manicured backyard, you can do that too. But I think we all know Felder Rushing is out there, and the gentleman has made a living letting things go. And wow, has he been smart and done so much for us in so many different ways. I've got a question here from a texter who says, do worms and insects come out of the ground when it freezes, or do they go deeper? They go deeper, and that's exactly why that's exactly why I leave all those leaves on my yard. Your question is just on time. I have tons of birds in my yard, too. And, yes, that layer of leaves helps provide another added layer of insulation and prevents those worms and insects from going even further down into the ground so that they are available for our birds. Now, understand, when it's below freezing, like it is right now, the worms aren't going to be at the surface. Give that, okay? But that leaf litter is so important in providing habitat for them through these cold time periods. Here's another texture that says, I recently bought some lamb and noticed that there's two sloughs on the backside of my little 6 acres that somebody's put wood boxes in. I live very close to the Pearl River, just north of Highway 43. Is there anything I could do to maybe bring those wood ducks and not to hunt them? But I think they're beautiful. Well, sure, you can buy wood duck boxes, and those are available at any birding specialty store. I know that they have them at Wild Birds Unlimited. I have a wood duck box in my garage that's waiting to go up out of my place. I've gotten physically to the point where I'm not able to put it in anymore, so I'm waiting to find somebody that'll install that box for me. But wood duck boxes are very easy to put in. I'm assuming that's what you meant there, put wood duck boxes in. Sure, go get a wood duck box, mount it, make sure that it's near water or over water. They prefer over water if they can find it, but if they can't find it over water, I tell you, one of the most wonderful natural wood duck cavities that I've ever seen was in Madison County. My parents were looking at a house that they almost bought a number of years ago. This is, probably 25, 30 years ago. And they looked at a house, and the tree, there was a pine tree right beside the house, and about 50 feet up in that pine tree, there was a wood duck with her head sticking out. And I got so excited, I wanted to buy the house just because the wood duck had a nest there. Old pileated woodpecker hole, and that's what wood ducks naturally nest in, is old pileated woodpecker holes. And that old pileated woodpecker hole had that wood duck in it. And don't you know that that's got to be a first step that is crazy out of this world? You can go to YouTube and put into your search browser baby ducks jumping from nest hole or wood ducks jumping from nest hole and see video footage of these little ducklings. They'll take that first step out of the nest the day after they're born. They hatch one day, and then the next day they leave the nest.
Like a duck to water.
Oh, yeah. And and they will take off. I've seen video footage of them going 50 or 60 feet down, and they just hit the forest floor. Another good reason to leave those leaves in your yard. They'll hit the forest floor, and they just bounce off the leaf litter. And after they bounce a couple of times, they line up behind mama and head off to the water. And it's just the most amazing thing to see. And, of course, if the hole is over the water, then they just fall right down into the water, and that's even better for them.
What do you call the baby ducks? I know you
– duckling.
Duckling, but like a – okay, so we got a duckling. But if you have a herd of them, a whole flock of them behind mama, is that a specific term?
Ooh.
When you have like five or six of these little fuzzy-headed rascals that are just, you know, right behind her.
I just call it a train of baby ducks.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a specific term that I'm not familiar with or not.
Because there's like a murder of crows and
yes,
all those things.
Yes.
So, yes.
Well, ducks are in rafts,
okay.
R-A-F-T, a raft of
okay.
ducks. But that's usually specific species of ducks that form these massive floating bodies of 200, 300, 400, or 500 ducks, like your mergansers or your some of your sea ducks and things.
Is there a prettier bird than the hooded merganser? I mean, when you see it up close, it's something. I had one that landed probably maybe five to 10 feet from me. I was camoed up so well, and I was waiting in about, I don't know, over the belly button of water, and nothing but button willows and cypress trees. Water was the same color as everything I was, you know, around. And the wood ducks were just bombing in. This is a few years ago. And there was a bunch of different random birds in this little long slough that we call Mallard's Arm. And I had a hooded merganser just landed right in front of me, maybe 5 or 6 feet. And I was totally covered other than my eyes. I could have reached out and touched it almost, and I was so impressed with myself. I didn't shoot it, obviously. I mean, it was I've gotten to that point where watching them, you know, if you can get them that close, man, they're just so beautiful.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. A male hooded merganser is an absolutely stunning duck.
Afro, goodness gracious, man, I loved it.
I don't know that I'd call it an afro. I think of it more like a mohawk. Yeah,
whatever you want to call it.
That's a beautiful, beautiful bird. And I tell you, I saw another beautiful bird this last week. Not this last week, this last month. The day after Christmas, there had been reports about a pair of snowy owls up in Chicago. I haven't been on since this has happened, so this will be fun for everybody. Two snowy owls up in Chicago, and I left the day after Christmas, and my wife and I did the 12 and a half hours up and spent 3 days up there looking for those two birds. They disappeared just a day or two before I got there, of course, because I've been chasing snowy owls for 35 years. Anyway, when I got there, there was a long-tailed duck, which is a gorgeous sea duck from the Arctic that had been found in the same place where the snowy owls were. And I was able to see the long-tailed duck, but alas, alack, I lack the snowy owls because I missed them once again, which is no fun. Boy, there's a lot that we could talk about this morning with all of this winter weather and the feeding of the birds. And
what about
we
eagles?
Have eagles.
Now, we had a question. I've been thinking about it because we have – you know, when you see two of them, and they've been there for a while, like we have a place, and I haven't been able to see them as much this year, but sitting out in the duck blind on 5 Mile in Issaquena County, we have two that just circle as high as you can imagine, the most
yes.
beautiful things. But what is it like with the babies, the offspring of eagles? How often do they breed? How successful?
They'll breed every year.
Mm-hmm. And then where do they go? Because I don't necessarily see the young very
well,
often.
You don't see the young because they'll stay in the nest until they're as big as mom and dad.
Really?
And when they leave the nest, of course, they look, they're the same size as the parents. Of course, they don't have the white head and the white mm-hmm. tail. That doesn't come until about the third to fourth year. They go through a transition phase. But a first year, second year bald eagle will very much be mistaken for a golden eagle because it doesn't have the white head and the white tail. People misidentify our eagles all the time, but the babies are around. They're quite common, and we see quite a few eagles this time of year. We've got more eagles in the deep south during the winter than we do in the summer months, and we do have several nesting pairs in our area.
John in Florence is saying he's seen quite a few, and one put on a great show for him the other day before he decided to fly on away.
We're going to talk more about what's happening in your yard. We're going to talk to Janet Lieber later on today with the Garden Club of Madison, and she's going to tell us about a special event they've got going on. We're going to be back with you here in just a few moments. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Nellie Neal, the Garden Mama, right here on Super Talk Radio.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
Sleep well tonight in the comfort that your family is propane safe. Rest easy knowing that you had your propane installation and repair inspected by using a professional and avoiding the hazards of improperly using gas lines. Contact your propane provider and stay safe. Visit mspropane.com for more information and safety tips. That's mspropane.com. Energy for everyone. Propane.
Frisco Deli serving.
And good morning once again, Mississippi. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Nellie Neal this morning. What a wonderful day. It's sunshiny, at least. It may be frigid out there, but it's warm here in the studio, and we're glad that you're with us today, that we can talk to you and have a good time. And we've got a special guest in the studio right now, and I'm excited to see her because we go back a little bit, don't we?
Just a little bit.
Yes, with us, and we've been discussing the name this morning, going back and forth. I had information that said one and information that said the other, and I honestly, I have to tell you, Ms. Lieber, I didn't remember your first name, but
Susan.
I remembered your daughter. Yes.
She's my niece.
Your niece?
Another family. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we go back anyway. Now,
you had
kids that
played
soccer.
Yes.
And I know I had them too.
Yes.
Okay. So this is Susan Lieber, and she's with the Garden Club of Madison. And she's going to tell us, ladies and gentlemen, about something very exciting that's happening in the next couple of weeks, in 2 weekends in Madison. And boy, am I looking forward to this one.
It's going to be great. It's called Rooted in Mississippi. It's a gardening symposium featuring three wonderful speakers. The topic is all things Mississippi. Rooted came from the thinking that these are people that either reside in Mississippi or originally resided in Mississippi and are coming back here to talk about things that they know
idea.
And love. Yes.
I like the tie-in with the rooted family roots and whatnot. So where is this going to take place?
It's going to be at Briarwood in Madison on Highway 22, mm-hmm. just out past Lake Caroline. It will be February the 19th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We've got three fabulous speakers, and that does include lunch as well.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so. And you're giving away kudzu, right?
No.
Yeah, I'm kidding you.
No.
I kid with you.
No, but lots of other great tips.
Kudzu tips?
No kudzu tips.
If I know the Garden Club of Madison, and I have had the pleasure to get to speak to them a time or two in the past, if I know the Garden Club of Madison, this is going to be a top-notch thing. Tell us about some of the speakers.
I would love to. Our first speaker of the day is Philip Watson, mm-hmm. who is originally from Lexington, Mississippi. He's got a lot of family in the central Mississippi area now, and he resides in Westchester, Pennsylvania. He is a renowned horticulturalist. He has designed beautiful landscapes and gardens for years up in the northeast part of the country on the eastern seaboard. He's done things here in the Mississippi area. He was a product designer and host and speaker on QVC for many, many, many years.
Wow.
And he is also an author and publisher of a couple of books. He'll be bringing those. He has been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post. He has judged international flower shows. So he does know what he's talking about, and he's got so many wonderful things to talk to us about as well. Gina Diamond will be our speaker in the middle. I call her our halftime show.
Okay.
She is a new publisher, an author as well of a book called The Blooming Table. She is going to bring so many new ideas for us, tablescapes, floralscapes, entertaining ideas and trends. We're really looking forward to that. And then we're going to wrap up with Robert St. John, who's got lots of things to talk about, food, travels, interesting things about Mississippi that you may or may not know. So it's a full day packed full of lots of friends, fellowship, and good stuff to take home with you.
That sounds really exciting. Tell us now about the tickets and where someone can get a ticket, how much they are.
Okay, they are $65. That does include lunch. You can go to the Garden Club of MadisonMS.com. You can also go, there's a register button on that. You can also go to our Instagram page, which is Garden Club of Madison. We also have a Facebook page, Garden Club of Madison, and you can it'll come up as an event. So you can go to any of those three and get your tickets. We'll send you a confirmation shortly.
That sounds really interesting. Now, I'm very familiar with Strawberry Patch Park and the Flutterway Pollinator Garden. I've done some work out there. Tell us a little bit about what you do at the Webster Animal Shelter and the Red Caboose.
The Webster Animal Shelter, we have given them a little bit of an exterior facelift. Mm. We've put some plantings in out there, seasonal plantings out there. We've painted their front door, which looks really good. We're not in the paint business, but it just kind of matches the the plant material that we put in. But it's a really happy facelift because it's a happy place. The caboose, we have worked on that for many, many years. The garden club has been around for 28 years, our particular garden club. So we maintain that. But we're going back in this year with the America 250 initiative, and we'll have lots of red, white, and blue plantings there. We're also going to do that several other places around town as well, too, working with them. America 250 hand-in-hand as our 250th birthday comes up this summer.
Excellent. You know, I said I was familiar with the Flutterway Pollinator Garden and what was going on at Strawberry Patch, but our listeners probably aren't. So why don't you go ahead and jump that into?
Oh, well, the Flutterway Pollinator Garden is so beautiful. It's the upper end of the southern end of the park. I say the upper end, but it's the southern end of the park. And that is a that's a new project that has been Keep Madison the City Beautiful has working on that. There are several other entities as well. And it is a garden full of pollinators that we hope to bring butterflies in, bees, that's a big thing, and people can look at it and learn from it as well, too. That will eventually tie in with the Children's Memorial Garden that's right down below it.
And that wonderful creek with the little waterfall going down through it is now back in action.
Yes, it is back in action. It's such a lovely spot just to go and just enjoy nature and learn. It's a learning center and just, you know, enjoy being outside.
One of our local Eagle Scout candidates took that on his project. His Eagle project was to get that cleaned out so that the garden club could, or the beautification committee could go back in and get that fixed up.
Yes.
So that's great.
We've got a lot of master gardeners out there as well, too, that work.
Yes. And several of those master gardeners are actually in the Madison Beautification Committee.
Yes, they are.
I know Sharon Rogers.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Is a member. Sharon and I go way back as well.
Yes.
She used to garden with my mother.
Oh, how nice.
In the Sandalwood neighborhood many, many years ago.
And they offer a lot of expertise to,
they do.
To our area.
And her husband, Mike, fine guy.
Gets great.
Fine guy.
We enjoy her so much.
So what else can we expect from this this weekend? Is there anything extra that you want to share with us? Are there any things to buy or giveaways?
There will be, yes, that day there will be three. Each of the guests all have a book. And Philip Watson will be he has a book, Garden Magic, that is wonderful. Gina Diamond has The Blooming Table. And Robert St. John has a new book about Christmas as well with lots of pictures and recipes and things like that. So each of those will be on sale that day, and that's you know, going to be an enjoyable part of it as well, too.
Wow. Sounds like quite a day. I may have to, you know what?
Come on
I'm doing
out and join us, Ken.
Right here, right here on the air. I'm checking my calendar.
Please do.
Because
please
I have no idea. You know what's going to end up happening.
I hope you don't have a conflict.
I don't have a conflict.
You don't have a soccer game.
They're probably going to call me to announce the state championship game.
Oh, well, if they don't, you make sure. Yeah, the 19th. It's
okay, that's Thursday.
Yes, during the day. So there should not be a game that day. We hope you'll
join teaching.
Us. Oh, okay.
I'm teaching that day. I retired in May, of course, and in September I got a phone call from one of my former students wanting me to come back, and she was going to be on maternity leave, and she asked me to teach her students, and I jumped back in and did that, and then they approached me and said, would you like to teach part-time this semester?
Always a teacher.
So,
always a teacher at heart.
I don't know about that.
Well, we're expecting a sellout. So if you want a ticket, they are rapidly going.
Wise.
Every day we get a new count. So if you want a ticket, we would just love to have you join us. So sign up.
Ms. Lieber, how many people are you expecting again?
350.
That's right. 350 is what it was, right?
Wow.
Yes, it'll be quite an event.
Well, I mean,
quite
you got
event.
Robert St. John. I mean, come on. He's one of our faves. You'd be hungry.
I know all about Robert.
He's a cutie.
Well, and then one of the neat ones here is Gina Diamond.
You know, she's just fabulous. Gina and I have been friends for so long. Our boys played soccer together, but we've been friends for so long. And I wanted to, you know, we wanted to promote her just because she's such a local powerhouse at this point, but she's just such a good speaker and a good teacher, and you'll take away so much from her. So we wanted to promote her as a friend, but golly Moses, she's a local treasure, that's for sure. She's a regional treasure.
The book is called Blooming Table.
The Blooming Table.
Sounds
and it is
amazing.
A beautiful book. Yeah. Beautiful coffee table book. And she says, break that spine and open it and
break
learn from it.
Spine.
Break that spine and cook out of it.
Lance, I don't know if you've ever been to any of these big garden club
I'm usually work.
Conferences, I know. A lot of these conferences, I've spoken at quite a few of them around the Southeast, and they have competitions for their table settings.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of focusing
and
on
it's
that.
It's a really, really, I would like to see the book itself, too.
I was thinking that book probably got bought a lot during the holiday season.
It did.
So if you're thinking of a great gift for next year, you've got Valentine's Day.
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day.
Right.
So any of these tablescapes, florals, her recipes, the book itself, The Blooming Table, makes me want to buy it.
Oh, it is just such a fabulous book. And she is the owner of Gina Diamond's Flower Company here in Madison. So you can go in there and buy it. You can buy it that day. But it is a treasure. When I say break that spine, I don't mean your spine. I mean the spine of the book.
You want to hear
the spine of the book. But open it up and see what's in there. But, gosh, Philip has got a terrific book as well, too, that you can get so much from, glean from, and Robert does, too. So we offer a lot that day.
And, well, and you also, all proceeds from the inaugural event. And this is the inaugural event,
Is the inaugural event, the first one. I hope it's the first of many, many, and we'll just grow and grow. But we have got a lot of projects around town now, but we got to fund them. So that's what this fundraiser is about. We've just got a lot of things out there going, and we've got members that are so eager to participate. They've done such great work at the library and so many, and the school gardens at Madison Station. But we have to fund these things. So
yes,
it's
it
very
costs
important
money.
That we have, we have a feeder there. So
I am glad you have a feeder there.
Yes.
And I want to thank you, Lance. Do you know that this is, and I've been in this business for a long, long time. This is the first time I've ever interviewed anybody on the air. So it's a good thing that you jumped in there because I was flying blind over here.
Thank you, Lance. Tell us about this.
Well, I was looking so forward to this as well because there's so many things that, you know, that your outreach is able to impact.
Oh, yes.
You got the Webster Animal Shelter,
yes.
Red Caboose Beautification, the Madison Library, all of these things. But one question I had for you, do you have to be a Madison resident to?
No.
You do not, right?
No.
So if you want to be a part of the beautiful Madison,
you
don't have to be a resident, correct?
No, and you know our reach for projects is kind of growing out into the county areas too. But we have members from other areas, and we encourage that. So we're not exclusive, but the core of ours are from Madison. But we are not exclusive. We'd love to have anybody that would
Good
like to join us. Yes,
good
yes.
to know.
Well, great group of friends.
Susan, I tell you, it's exciting to hear about something new like this taking place in the area. And we thank you and the Garden Club of Madison for putting something
thank
like
you
this
so
together.
Much. Thank
so
you so
exciting.
Much. Well, it's fun to have things to do in our area like
well, that.
Well,
and I mean, if you, this is the inaugural one, you're expecting 350 people with
yes.
the lineup of folks you have culinary, you got artistry, you've got books,
right.
speakers. It's going to be a bang up. First event. I can't
we
imagine
sure
this isn't going to happen a second time.
We're planning for it.
What are you
going
to do to top this?
I don't know, but we already had ideas flying around for the next one, so who knows? But we've got a lot of creative minds in our group, and that's the best part of it, is they're so creative out in the community, but then they just love being together as friends as well.
And it starts at 10 o'clock.
10 a.m.
I just realized my planning period that
yes.
day is from 10 o'clock until about 11:45.
So
you
I may be able to get out there.
You come on out. Come on out and join us.
And Rosa's not that far from Briarwood.
No, it is not. No, it's not.
I may have to get out there.
Super. We'd love to have you.
I'd
We'd love to have anyone
there.
Else that would be like to be with us.
Y'all get those tickets. This is promising to be a really, really big deal for the first time. And a lineup like this for the first time event is just amazing. And yes,
all about Mississippi.
Is Robert going to bring any food?
We hope so. We're really, really hoping so. If not, he's going to talk about it enough to make us go out to eat afterwards, I'm sure.
Okay.
We hope so.
And registration's at 10 o'clock. The
yes.
first presentation at 10:30, I see,
10:30,
is
yes.
Philip Watson. And then Gina Diamond at 12 and Robert St. John at 2.
Yes.
Wow.
And I want to brag on Philip Watson again. He is just an outstanding creative mind that brings so much gardening knowledge with him too, and that's a big focus of the day. And he is so vested in Mississippi, even still living away for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
He's got just a love. He's got a lot of family here still, and he is so excited about getting back here with us. And he's just excited about coming and just really wants to share what he knows with us and help us as
That's amazing.
Before we go to break, how did the Garden Club of Madison start low those many years?
It's Pam O'Keefe, one of our dearest members. She and about five others, from what I understand, started this 28 years ago. And it was a group that met in a backyard, bringing their coffee cup and a little bit of water and some seeds. And it was just a common desire to share knowledge and digging in the dirt. And it's just grown and grown and grown. And now we have 75 active members and about 30 emeritus members. So it's a group of about 100.
Wow.
But from those many years ago, and Pam is still an active member with us.
And you're well backed. I'm looking at this list of sponsors, and it's very impressive.
Very well backed. Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you so much for being with
us
today, Susan.
I appreciate your time so much. Thank you for having me, and Lance. You too.
Well, it's been a great morning to have you here.
Thank you. Good to
Thank you.
Reconnect.
Susan Lieber with the Garden Club of Madison here on Super Talk Radio.
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including inpatient and outpatient treatment for children and adolescents. If you have any questions, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
Nowadays, customers are searching online for the services they need.
Are they looking at your business?
Having a mobile-friendly website can really help you win new customers. Let SuperTalk Mississippi Media create a great-looking and very affordable website for your business. Plus, studies suggest that a well-written radio ad can lead to a 20% lift in traffic to your website. Just call SuperTalk Mississippi Media today at 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com.
Before you're here. With a brand new car. Cantaloupe eyes come to me tonight. Judy in the sky. With glasses.
And we're back. Gotta love that music. I tell you what, Lance, you and Mama just get together and put together the most wonderful music.
We have a lot of fun. Buddy is a great inspiration. Perez. His wealth of music knowledge. I say this all the time. Going in behind him after he's been in the production room, cutting up bumpers, and the depth of his knowledge of music. And I think I'm pretty good.
Across the genres.
I'm an idiot compared to him. I mean, it's amazing. Buddy is a musician, so he'll throw some great curveballs at me of bands that I've heard of, but maybe a song that I've never heard. Perez, I wouldn't even know the bands he's talking about, but man, he's so good at it. And then Nelly with her taste in music, we share a lot of the same taste there. So when I had to learn her library of music, I had to kind of figure out what she liked a little bit and what was kind of her style. So I'll throw a curveball on her here and there and play some love songs, like some Cajun love songs and stuff. But we have a lot of fun with the music, and our listeners are so nice to let us know when they don't like something and when they do. And it's 99% of the time they do like it. So greatly appreciate all that, too, because, you know, that's what the bumper music's for. We hope y'all enjoy it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to check something here, and I'm having a hard time because I'm playing with my phone to check it. And it's not because I'm not being attentive here. I'm trying to find something specific to answer a question that one of our listeners has texted in with. The question is read, "Hi, Ken Hagman. I'm 85 and have been wondering when, and I'm not sure how they were trying to do this here, but when pileated woodpecker entered the lexicon along with the correct pileated woodpecker. Is it a southern thing? Although I am from Macon. I'm not sure whether you're talking about the difference between the pronunciations of pileated or pileated or mentioning something else. I see that you have written down pileated, and I don't know that I've ever heard that before. I will say that the correct pronunciation is pileated. Now, you will hear some wonderful expert birders that know more about birds than I do by a long shot say pileated, but the correct pronunciation is pileated. And the name comes from the pileum or red crest that they have. And the red crest, pileum, was named after the red crests that were, or pilea, that were on the crests of the Knights of the Round Table in ancient Albion or ancient England. It's part of English historical lore. Whether the history is true or imagined, the term pileum has been around for a long, long time, and it refers back to that red crest. So pileated woodpecker is correct, and that is the correct pronunciation, but again, a lot of people accept and do use the term pileated. I got
about two or three of them back in my area that, once we had it, you know, kind of cleaned up a little bit and trees put down, the woodpeckers have showed up. There was one I would catch regularly, about a foot tall, big old rascal.
Yeah.
And he is beautiful. But now I've got probably three or four back there that I've seen that have just absolutely been enjoying the old dead trees.
Oh, yes.
But those dudes and dudettes work. I mean, when they're after it, they will sit there and hammer and hammer and hammer. Until, I don't know, when do they get done? I mean, obviously they're eating, but...
They eat year-round. And understand that, again, and this goes back to what we talked about a little while ago, insulation is always present. Wood has an insulatory value. You know, it's got an R value, as Buddy will talk to us about later on. And woodpeckers, inside those dead trees, there's an awful lot of life, and it's going on all of the time. And the woodpeckers may have to dig a little deeper to find food in the wintertime, but it's still there, and it's still active, overwinter.
It's almost like they have a chisel.
They
on
do?
Their, I mean, you'll just see chunks flying off and flying, especially the old dead pines where, you know, there's some good old worms in there and stuff, and they'll work
grubs.
Up and down that thing and eat and eat and eat. And my thought's always been like, when do they get full? Or is it that they're so active and they're, this time of year, they're trying to build up? Or
think about the metabolism that birds have. Their heart rate is way faster than ours. They have a very high metabolic rate. Baby birds have to be fed. And when I mean the individual baby bird has to be fed every 20 minutes or it does not survive. That's why you see such a tremendous growth in altricial species, those that nest in trees or up off the ground. Precocial are those that nest on the ground.
Like quail, duck,
geese, yes. They hatch and they're gone from the nest immediately after hatching.
And they're obviously more predators or susceptible to more type of predators on the ground. Is that
accurate? Well, that's why they are up and out immediately, because the odor of, say, the fluids that are inside that amniotic sac inside the egg is going to attract something. As soon as that egg cracks, that odor is out there. And that reminds me that we had another question. Somebody wanted to know about how all of the how in the world do the turkey and black vultures successfully hunt in this 20-mile-an-hour wind?
Downwind, huh?
Well, no. It's the black vultures circle and they find their food based on sight. Turkey vultures find theirs based on smell.
Right.
And that's where knowing which way the wind is blowing is going to be a factor. I would say when it's blowing this hard, there's probably not a whole lot of eating going on per se, especially when it's this cold. But they've got to have food and they've got to have fuel. And I tried to mix those two words together just now. But they've got to have all of that. So it's going to come out that way.
Obviously, like coyotes, fox, things of that nature, are those going to be the most prevalent predators for the ground-based?
Coyotes are huge. Fire ants.
Fire ants. I forgot
about
them.
Just massive predators of ground nesters. Snakes get quite a few. But, of course, for a snake, they've just got to come across it.
They're just running across
The biggest things are going to be your foxes and coyotes and fire ants that I can think of. Of course, if the grasses are shorter, then birds of prey are also a possibility. A lot of people don't realize how many nestlings, and primarily altricial birds, but how many nestlings are taken by blue jays or
the Blue Jays are ruthless.
Yes, Crows, Blue Jays, Ravens, all of those. Of course, we don't have the Ravens in Mississippi, but all of those are.
Well, that was written this week, a couple hundred years ago, The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Really?
Yeah, well, I actually quoted it, you know, nevermore, 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 Lenore.
Nevermore.
You remember that one.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary,
I did
many
the,
a forgotten. Yes,
I read the first two lines. Yeah.
I love that
week.
Piece.
Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven came out in 18 whatever it was.
Let me see these. Thought I might. Hello again.
So what is it about the raven that we do not see here? Is it you know, longitudinally speaking, it's a limitation?
They are found in more montane regions.
Okay.
They like vertical surfaces.
Crags.
I am having a bad, bad tongue morning this morning. It's yes, it's easy for you to say.
Yeah, exactly.
We're having fun this morning, though. And that's the thing to do this morning, folks. It's cold outside. Stay warm.
Cold is an understatement. That's
yes.
Rigid.
Do get out there and fill your feeders up. Get plenty of black oil sunflower out there for the birds and whatever else they need.
When we come back on the other side, I did want to ask you a little bit about sunflower field prep and for doves and things of that nature, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Give us a little
entree. We'll be glad to talk about that. Again, this is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning. We're feeling our way through the dark and the cold. Give us a call. The number to reach us is 888-808-8637 or text us at 601-879-4395. We'd like to talk to you about what's going on in your neck of the woods. We'll be back right after this short break.
Always reaching out in vain, just taking the things not worth having. But don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
We are advocacy. A century of wins. Protecting private property rights. Advancing technology. Sustaining our land. Conserving our natural resources. All to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
My wife could finger pick, listening to her finger pick through Elise on a 12 string. We literally used to have, when I was at school at Mississippi State, we would have parties and we'd stay up almost all night long listening to my wife and another person that was in our group, a young man by the name of Gray Daniel, and sometimes a third person.
Not the car dealer.
No.
Plural there.
There's an S on the end of that one. And this one, no S. And they would play all night long Beatles tunes and just all kinds of music, show tunes, you name it.
And, I did look up Miss Rosemary Stovall. It's Rosemary McLean Stovall.
Yes.
And if anyone's interested out there, I think Malico may have done some work with her as well. And there's a good discography and biography out there on her. So always love highlighting our local musicians because, quite frankly, they're the most talented on the planet. I mean, I think that speaks for itself. And there's a lot of them out there that you've never heard of that'll blow your mind when you listen to them play. So that maybe Miss Stovall is one that everyone wants to go dig in and take a listen. Because thank you for the update on that. That's good stuff.
I don't know that it's an update. I was just telling you about how good my wife was.
Yeah, man. Well, you turned us on to Miss Stovall, too, you know. Music is such a great conduit to communicate. And when you feel that, it's kind of like looking at it's like a little bit like the beauty and art form of a plant. You know, it's the complexities of it. everything kind of gets put into a little container, the stem up to the mm-hmm. red. I mean, and it all blossoms and blows up in this beautiful creation that nature has. And man created, you know, art because God created nature. And so our emulation of God.
And he did a wonderful
boy,
job.
Howdy. You know, he did. Anytime I look at a wood duck, I know that there's some complexity to this world that I don't understand and a beauty to it that I get to appreciate.
And there is so much beauty. We got a couple of text questions came in. One is from Jake Pettigrew. Good morning, Jake. How are you out there? Quick question. Are dick thistles closer related to cowbirds or sparrows? They're actually in the family that contains the cardinals and the grosbeaks. They're finches. And that's... if you've got one coming in with the cowbirds and the house sparrows, then I would say just enjoy. Is it coming into seed feeders? That's a question that I would have. I'd love to know about that. I've never, and being in the part of Mississippi that I'm in, I guess I never really thought about dick thistles coming to a feeder, whether they would come to a feeder or not. I never associated them with seed eating as far as that goes. And it just never occurred to me to think about it. I am embarrassed that that's an area that I am lacking in knowledge in. While Jake lets us know whether or not that came in from seed or not, that's, if you would let me know that, I would appreciate it, Jake. We'll read this from Betty in Hattiesburg. She says she got a bat house, and the internet says it might take years for the bats to come. Yes, Betty, unfortunately, that is true. We have had people, after getting a bat house, have bats within 2 or 3 days, and sometimes it may take years. It's just a matter of the bats finding the house. They need that habitat so much, and I'm glad you got the bat house. Please read up on where best to put it in different people's situations and how they like to have things done at their home. There are better ways to do it than some others. I personally, the best is if you have it actually mounted on your house up under the gable facing east. That would be the best case scenario.
And now, no light, right?
Very little. Mine's in broad sunlight.
Okay.
It's just right up.
Is it, one question, I haven't seen as many in the winter of the bats. I normally have 4 or 5.
They hibernate.
That was my question. What temp do they hibernate, and when do they kind of come back out of their hibernation?
You know, one of the funny things is to see an eastern pipistrelle or some of our other bat species inside a cavern, a cave or a little cavern. And in Mississippi, some of those are pretty strange-looking little crags or openings. Some of these beautiful, beautiful little things are about the size of maybe 1.5 to 2 inches long, no more than that. And they'll be covered in frost during the winter months in that cave. But one of the great things about caves is that there's a temperature that is maintained on a pretty stable basis year-round, but they just stay inside the cave during the winter months. And we do have a number of caverns here in Mississippi that a lot of people are not familiar about. I don't know if the Mississippi Speleological Society still exists. I believe it did at one time. My father first took me caving as I was growing up, and, of course, we did a lot of caving over in Europe when I was living in Germany. But just a lot out there. Someone asks, is there a way to lure in bats? I have plenty in my house, but I guess it's because they've been there for decades now. As far as luring in bats, I don't know that there's anything you can do other than have the right stuff. You remember the movie, The Right Stuff. You got to have the right stuff, and the right stuff is water, insects, and habitat. And they like a nice dark place to roost during the daytime. Of course, that's provided automatically. My bat house is in broad sunshine, but it's mounted in such a way the hole for a bat house is underneath, and it's dark underneath because the sun doesn't enter into the box itself. So that's how that works. I'm going back and forth here. I think I'm having an ADHD day, Lance. It's just one of those days.
Well, that's the way the text line works, you know. I mean, doing this every day, you never know what you will get from the text line, and that's one of the great things is people have curiosities like I do. My question was, you know, I haven't seen the bats.
Yeah.
And so they do hibernate.
Yes.
Are they going to find – obviously, we don't have many –
there's not a lot of insects for them to eat in the wintertime.
Right, a lot of crags and caverns and things in central Mississippi. So where are they going to hibernate if there is no bat house? Trees? Where are they going?
They'll find some sort of crag somewhere. Mm-hmm. And crag is not the correct term. Some sort of niche somewhere. I know that underneath houses, inside people's attics, there are plenty of places that they can get away from that cold. In hollow trees, mm-hmm, is one of the greatest places that we have them. Under bridges, we have a lot of them.
Okay.
I would need to talk to Allison with the Mississippi Bat Working Group to find out exactly what our wintering population is. I don't know that off the top of my head. But the Mississippi Bat Working Group does a lot of work around the state to tabulate and monitor a lot of these various bat populations, because we've got quite a few species in the state, and there are quite a few more that migrate through the state.
And that was my next question. Do they migrate?
Because yes,
they don't
some
look
do.
To fly very straight line. You know, they kind of right. bounce around radar-wise. So when, you know, I guess that brings my second question about bats is, in movies, you'll see this great flock of bats, mm-hmm, coming out of a cavern or out of a
yes.
chimney.
Yes.
But I always only see one or two or three at a time. Is that geographically limiting, or is it the type and species?
Geographically Okay. Geographic and geologic. That's
okay.
the other word that I was looking for. There is a cave in Austin, Texas, just outside of Austin, Texas, that has the largest number of bats anywhere in the world, mm-hmm, in one place. And to see them coming out is amazing. It is mind-blowing. Owls and hawks and the like literally sit at the entrance and just reached out and pick them off to eat. It's amazing to see it happen every night. And Texas has been on the forefront of bat conservation. And one of the great things that they've done, bridges in Texas are required to be built bat-friendly now.
Okay.
And that's an amazing thing. So many people have misconceptions about bats and are misguided about the information there that they – George in Biloxi says he needs to find one of those caves now. It's cold out
yeah,
here.
Yeah, well, that kind of – when you were talking about Austin, I know that you have had some experiences in Big Bend National Park.
Oh, yes.
Now, it's 41 degrees there right now, much more balmy than what we're dealing with here in Mississippi. And
mm-hmm,
you got North Mississippi around South Haven. It's around 17 degrees this morning. Probably should get up to about 25.
Now, that 41 in Big Bend, is that – down in Rio Grande Village, or is that up at Chisos,
yeah,
in the Chisos Basin?
That's not telling me exactly where I'm getting the temp from, but it definitely is in the park somewhere. I can say that. So, and also, I wanted to say Corinth, 18, you're going to be up to about 25 today. And South Haven, as I said, you'll be up to about 25 degrees today. And also in the Delta, you're going to get up to about 28 degrees today. So,
right.
It's going to be really cold out there, but you don't have to worry about any precipitation, hopefully.
No. We're not supposed to have any precipitation until next week.
It should be around Tuesday. It looks like we could get some showers Tuesday and in the northern half of the state. So hoping that everyone will have some success this weekend with getting some power back on, getting the water going. Please, folks, I know y'all are still going through a mess out there. Here we are in central Mississippi talking about birds. But at the end of the day, you know, we're still thinking of you guys. So if you have things that you need today, please, I'll be here most of the day. Let me know. And, you know, you got Samaritan's Purse and all those are working hard in North Mississippi. But I wanted to go back to Big Bend because Nellie and I were talking about that. She goes, you know, the next time he goes to Big Bend, I'm going to have to go. And I said, you know,
let's do it.
I got to jump on this trip. It's one of the places that I've always wanted to visit. Now, tell me a little bit about Big Bend, what you see there, why you go.
Wow.
And, you know, what's so special about this place?
The amazing thing about Big Bend National Park, it is you're in the middle of the Chihuahuan Desert. And you've got hundreds of miles of desert all around you. And in the center of Big Bend National Park, it's in that great big bend, that's how it got the name, of Texas that dips down with the Rio Grande River. That great big bend. And in the middle of all of that desert is a an ancient caldera of an ancient volcano, and there are ridges of that volcano all the way around the park, and you drive up into that ancient caldera, and there's a basin up in the top of that that's got forests and creeks and waterfalls, and it's just the most amazing place that you can imagine. So you've got everything from the desert environment. You've got the montane crags up high. Crags is the word of the day, by the way. I don't think I've used the word crags as many times as I have today in my entire life, and it just has been coming out that way, folks. A lot of folks that go to Big Bend go there for the geology. It is an amazing place. It is unique in so many different ways. Geology classes from universities all over the U.S. and other countries come to Big Bend or go to Big Bend just to study the rock formations and the uplifts, because all of that geologic upheaval that took place way back when that ancient volcano erupted are evident and right out there in the open to see. And I've traveled the world, Lance. I'm hoping to make enough money with this part-time teaching gig that I've got right now to make it to my last continent and get to Antarctica.
Now, that's a place I'd like to visit with the right clothing.
Yes. With the right clothing, and definitely want to go in January when it's warm.
I want to see the aliens, too. You know, the ones living under the ice and all that, and we're, you know, it's just a fascinating continent.
I just want to see the penguins, the albatrosses, mm-hmm. the skuas, the leopard seals, the elephant seals. I want to take all the wildlife
that is there.
Yes, I want to see everything that moves.
Things that can actually live in those temperatures, you know.
Absolutely.
They thrive in those areas. And some of the lakes, you know, was it Vostok?
Vladivostok?
Well, I think, is it Rostov or Vostok? I can't remember. The lake that the Russians drilled down into that is like 3 miles beneath the eastern portion of the ice shelf. And they found all kind of neat bacteria and things that have never been discovered before. Seems like it'd be some type of a lab, you know, down there that that the cold protects so well and keeps isolated.
Lake Vostok.
It's Vostok, yeah. That's it. I've been doing so much research on the Cossacks. I was thinking of Rostov and Don and the Caspian and the other sea, at any rate. But, yeah, sorry, I digress. We had an update from Tanya in Tupelo. Tanya told me, she just called. She goes, Lance, I'm sitting in line waiting to do this, that, and the other, and we have snow flurries up here. It's not very much, but they are having some snow flurries up in North Mississippi right now.
Wow.
Hopefully no accumulation, and hopefully it will go away soon. I know everybody's sick of the white stuff, but I did want to give an update. So if you're seeing some flurries up there, you will not be the only one seeing them. Miss Tanya saw those as well. So when you get down to Big Bend, do you hike around? Are you on a guided tour? Do you tent up somewhere?
I do my own thing. I tent up. If you want to camp in the primitive camping, there are campgrounds that you can put a tent in or a camper. But if you want to do primitive camping, you have to get a permit at the office there at Panther Junction. It's such a wonderful thing. I saw a text here from Jake, and I've got to ask about this. Jake, you say they're closing the Chico Basin. I'm talking about the Chisos Basin, Chisos. Is that what you're talking about at Big Bend? They're closing that? I don't know how they would close the entire basin. That's – wow. Please give us another text and let us know if that's what's happening.
So Panther Junction is where you are going. It looks like a neat little spot to start out.
Yes. It's the main entrance.
Yeah, main entrance.
Location. It's not the entrance to the park, mm-hmm. but that's the headquarters for the ranger stations and whatnot. That's where most of the rangers live, is right there at Panther Junction.
Well, you get into some pretty interesting terrain due south of there. The Chisos Basin Center is which one he's referring to, I suspect. You got like Lost Mine Peak and Emery Peak in the South Rim.
Lost Mine is wonderful. You take that trail. It's a one-way trail. You mm-hmm. go up and then come back down the same trail. You go up to the top of that, and the view is just amazing. And you'll see birds flying around up there that you won't see in lower elevations, like the
what
violet
is the
green swallow. Oh, it's probably around 7,000.
As you work your way down to the Rio?
Yeah. And I love the Lost Mine Trail. The South Rim Trail is probably the most beautiful view in the park. The Window Trail is quite nice. That's very close to Panther Junction.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much to do at Big Bend.
It's beautiful. I mean,
miles
absolutely.
And miles. And one year that I was there, and a lot of you are probably familiar with the well-known Madison photographer, Stephen Kirkpatrick, who has done some just magnificent work. One year I was there, and it had snowed at Big Bend. And snow is a rare thing there, and it sat on the ground for a while. And because it snowed, that slowly melted and seeped into the soil, and it allowed plants to germinate that had not germinated in years. Because a desert, when it rains, it runs right off. Mm-hmm. But snow melted slowly. And as it did, it created a spectacle that we'll talk about on the other side of this break. Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama this morning. You're listening to Super Talk Radio. Right here.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. It's all right. It's all right.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Propane gas is used in many commercial establishments, such as hotels, motels, restaurants, hospitals, and is used in much the same way as it is in residential. It is used for heating, cooling, lighting, and industrial applications such as forklifts and construction. Propane, energy for everyone. Visit propane.com. That's propane.com.
Ace Bull.
I tell you what, if a little Zydeco can't get your blood pumping, nothing can.
I play it regularly, so I hope people like it. I love Zydeco. I love little Cajun music, you know, personally. I remember cutting up a couple and sending them over to my dad. And he's like, "Who is this?" And I was like, "Dude, I'm sorry. I hope you liked it." He goes, "No, man, send me more of that Cajun music." And I mean, he loves it. Like me, it just feel good music.
Do you know what my first concert was as a young man?
No, sir.
I went over to Meridian. And by the way, I was in Meridian last night for
what
Kansas.
A great place, man.
It was a great concert last night with Kansas.
They know how to do it over in Meridian when
it
comes to some music and fun.
My first concert as a young man was going over to Meridian to see Louisiana's LaRue.
Nice. Yeah, I have one of Louisiana LaRue songs on here that we cut. Buddy, we did something about 2 years ago, and I didn't have an idea who Louisiana LaRue was, but I learned, you know, what good stuff.
Love that music. Love that music. Jake came back and said that it definitely is closing down. Chisos Basin area, the entire basin is going to close for 2 years. And access to the trails at the basin will close for 2 years. Now, there will be plenty of access to those trails from other
areas
in the park that you can hike to there. There,
you'll still be able to get to the South Rim and places.
Oh, yes.
Like, you're just not from the Chisos.
Not from the Chisos.
Okay.
Well, South Rim is in the Chisos,
yeah,
but not from the Chisos Basin.
Okay.
Not
because
from
that
the Chisos Basin
we
area.
We were going to that. I went to the South Rim and looked. You know, the view is absolutely
phenomenal,
amazing,
isn't it?
Yes. Man. Are you kidding me?
And it does close down. The South Rim Trail does close down sometimes of the year for peregrine falcon nesting. So that is an on-again, off-again thing, depending on what's happening with the falcons in the park.
When you look at the trees that are growing, how tall are those trees, those mesquite-style trees?
It depends on the elevation. The higher up you go, the shorter they are. The lower in elevation you are, the taller they are. Some of them are good 20, 30 feet.
Okay.
They're not that short. But I tell you, that's a magical place to go. I've been to Yellowstone. I've been to Acadia. You know, they talk about all the different national parks.
Where's Acadia?
Maine.
Maine. Okay.
Bahaba. Yeah. And that is that is a gorgeous national park. Glacier is a gorgeous national park. I've done most of the big parks that are considered beautiful, and I have to tell you that Big Bend can stand with any of them. It's a different kind of beauty, and I think it's a beauty that it takes a special kind of person to appreciate. The desert is gorgeous. We were talking right before the break about that snowfall year, mm-hmm. and I just happened upon it because I take kids or students to Big Bend on a regular basis, and one year I took a group out there. Actually, the year that I'm talking about, I didn't take students. It was my mom and dad and my daughter, Mandy, when she was 9 years old. And we were out there and ran into Stephen Kirkpatrick, who, of course, is from Mississippi. And I'm like, Stephen, well, what are you doing here? And he was there for one of the same reasons I was. That snowfall that year allowed water to slowly seep into the dirt, the sand that's there, and moisten seeds that have been dormant for decades. The desert was alive that spring with the biggest bloom that it had had in something like 50, 60 years. And if you've never seen a desert completely in bloom, it is an amazing sight. And I'm talking just like fields of flowers. You think about the Texas bluebonnet, as far as the eye can see. And it wasn't like there were here or there. It was like almost every square inch. There were bluebonnets and Indian paintbrush and things growing that just boggled the mind. Fields of purple and blue and yellow and red in the desert. And you just don't think about that. And it was an amazing year. And it was an ironic trip because on the way over there, we stopped. Mom used to always talk about the fact that, we've got all these questions here. I am waxing poetic about my family history. Actually, I think that's right, Gary, with your spelling of Zydeco. Bubba in Starkville says, good morning, gentlemen and Lance. My name's Ken there. Live on the Tom Bigby Waterway, 10 miles south of Columbus. 20 years ago, white pelicans showed up. Okay, white pelicans migrate into our area in the wintertime. They are primarily a more northern species here. We love white pelicans. They have the largest wingspan of the birds here in North America. Beautiful, beautiful bird. Black wingtips. We are having white pelicans in the Madison area where I am for the last 20, 25 years, and now they are staying year-round, which is unusual because typically they're not here in the summertime. Beautiful birds, they hunt cooperatively. The brown pelican is the only pelican species that actually dives for its food. All of the white species, the Australasian, the white American white pelican, the European white pelican, all of them hunt cooperatively. And they'll swim in a semicircle, and the ones on the outside kind of feed the fish into the ones in the middle. And almost like using a seine. Beautiful birds, just absolutely gorgeous. They spend most of their time up north, come down here in the wintertime. Are there any falconry places here in Mississippi to go and watch and view the birds? There is a falconers group here in Mississippi. I do not have the name or contact information for anybody in that group right at hand, but I can probably find it pretty quickly. I'll take down your number here, if that is okay, and get back to you later. Let me just grab my phone because I don't have a piece of paper in here. Yes, I do. And I'm going to take care of that and get back in touch with you with information about local falconers. We do have several in the central Mississippi area, and it is very difficult to get into falconry these days. It's very expensive. It's very time-consuming. But there are people already doing it, and um, I obviously picked up a pen that does not work very well. I tell you, if Nellie's listening this morning, or if she listens to this later, she may never have me back on again, Lance. This has been my morning to be completely discombobulated in every way.
I've always been so fascinated with falconry. It's just so cool. What is the best bird?
Right now, the one that I see the most among falconers is the Harris's hawk.
Harris hawk, right, yeah.
It's a beautiful bird with its rusty shoulders and that white rump patch that it's got.
Now, you have to have permits to do this.
Oh, yes.
It's a highly regulated
federal permit that's highly regulated. It's extremely expensive, and it's extremely time-consuming. You have to spend a certain number of hours per day with your bird. And
the problem I would have is this one here, and the bird would probably not get along very well. Hawk, you know, he wants birds.
Yeah,
he really likes birds.
I get that. The problem I would have is that I don't have the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I could probably squeeze the time. Even once May comes and I am again fully retired, I don't have the time to spend with a bird the way it needs to be spent with. I know very few people that are in it. In fact, right now I can't name anybody off the top of my head. Jake went last year chasing the Kalima warbler. Oh, you didn't get it. Oh, no. I tell you what, Jake, get in touch with me sometime outside of the radio show here. I can take you right to the best spot in the park to get that bird. In fact, I will have to check. I'll tell you off the air. I don't want to sound like a braggart online. A couple of records there in the park that I have, and we'll talk about that later.
We have a phone call. I want us to get in before we head deeper into this segment, because Miss Anna in Oxford, she is on the horn, and Anna is one of our great listeners and callers, and she had questions about birds for the Birdman.
Excellent. Thank you, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I've been feeding the birds like crazy. They're going through birdseed, trust me. And it's expensive. But
yes.
I've got a whole patch of bluebirds, and they're all in their blue color. Is it a bit early for them to stop breeding?
No, they stay blue year-round. Eastern bluebirds don't change color in the wintertime. They're going to be blue year-round. The male will be vivid blue year-round, and the female will be just slightly less vivid blue all year-round herself.
Yeah, and then the other thing, before the ice storm and everything else, I was walking. It was cool. I was walking the dogs, and we have a lot of trees. I was walking up the street, and where one of the people who own a house have taken down all our trees. And I'm looking up in the sky to the trees, and there's these like dark lumps, and it's not leaves because the leaves are gone. I think it was hawks. We've got several hawk nests around here. And they're way up in the trees. The main trees have been taken down. So there must have been about six or seven dark lumps in the tree, way up. Would that have been hawks?
More likely squirrel nests.
No. I know what a squirrel nest looks like.
Okay.
It was like hugging against a branch, the main trunk.
Okay. Large birds hugging against main trunk. Now, I will say that great horned owls are known for hugging trunks.
Okay, could have been an owl, yeah.
But would not have been several of them. Owls are more solitary.
These were on different trees, not all together.
On different trees, okay. That's a possibility, especially as much tree damage as y'all have had up there in the Oxford area.
Oh, this is before the tree damage.
Oh, this is before the
–
okay.
One of the women up the street has taken down a lot of trees, and that's how I happened to notice these birds way up. I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking way up.
The other possibility is that black vultures roost a lot in tree areas way up high. And the black vultures will roost communally like that. They will get together, and there will be quite a few of them in a single area.
Yeah,
so that's a possibility.
We do have a lot of vultures around here, yeah.
Yes.
And I know we have the hawks. They breed early, don't they?
Hawks do, yes. In fact, the owls laid their eggs back before the turn of the year. Owls start laying their eggs in December in our area.
Ooh.
And
poor things.
Well, the chicks are already in the nest, and they are mamas on them, taking care of them.
I was thinking buzzards or vultures, because I've seen the exact same thing in my backyard. And, buddy, they get to the top of it, and they'll be
–
5 or 10 different nests around different trees within a couple of acres.
Yeah. The vultures will do that regularly almost anywhere in the state. I'm trying to visualize exactly what you were talking about. And you were saying this was beforehand. It's got to have been vultures.
Yeah, this is before the freeze. Yeah.
It's got to have been vultures. But those little owls are being taken care of by mom and dad. Somebody sent in a shot this morning of an owl in a tree down the coast.
Well, they got a lot of food because there's a lot of birds around here.
Yes. Well, owls primarily don't eat birds. No, owls are more rodent and small mammal feeders, feeding primarily on, and they will take snakes. That's a thing that doesn't happen as often.
Yeah, I don't think the snakes will be around here because I think they're cozied up underground. But rodents have to come out and eat, don't they?
Yes, they do. And they have to find that seed. And while they're out looking for it, the hawks and the owls are looking for them, for sure.
And my cat Sunshine caught one. He was having such a big time with a rodent. Must have been 2 days ago.
Was it a mouse or a vole?
It looked like a mouse. Yeah. And they had come out. It had gotten warm enough. And it thought he was going to get away from the vultures. And the cat was just waiting for it.
My cats are actually sitting on a chair looking out the window at the bird feeder.
That's where I prefer cats is indoors. I'm cats kill over a billion songbirds in the United States every year. And Nellie and I differ on this. She thinks that barn cats and outdoor cats are okay, and we are all entitled to our opinions, and hers is just as valid as mine.
Well, rescues, and they rescued themselves to our house.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, and they are indoor-outdoor cats.
Well, take good care of them. It's cold out there.
Yeah, well, they came a couple of years ago. But, we've got two dogs, two cats, and maybe 5 fish now. I'm not sure because the fish pond is solid.
Yes, very solid. But the fish will be okay because it's cold enough to keep oxygen in that water. Thanks for calling this morning.
And of course, it's deep, so maybe it's not right down the bottom there. But
yes.
They survived most winters. This was very different.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling this morning. You're the first caller I've had in quite some time.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I lived in Chicago 27 years, and that is nothing compared to what we had here.
Yes. Well, thanks for that. We'll be back after this break right here on Super Talk Radio.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including day and evening addiction treatment programs for working professionals. For more info, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
In life and in...
Another one that I could listen to just forever and ever.
Oh, yeah, man. That was just so smooth. There's some songs that are just...
timeless.
Timeless, right? I mean,
yes.
And that's one of those when you hear that... boom, boom. It's like, I know that one. Hey, we had a great picture of two bald eagles eating on
that deer carcass.
Man, that is... they're huge, man.
Yeah.
Goodness,
yeah, they are large. I had the opportunity to shoot, and when I say shoot, I'm usually talking about with the camera. And this particular time, I'm talking about with the camera. I had the opportunity to shoot some eagles on a halibut carcass up in Alaska several years ago.
Wow.
And there were 25 bald eagles that came in to feed on this halibut, and it was just an amazing thing.
Could you even see the halibut with 20-something eagles there? Man, they must have been carrying on, too, talking to each other. And
they were standing in different places. Like one eagle or one pair of eagles would come in and feed at a time, and then they would move off and another pair would come in. But
so they have social graces.
Yes, they do. They really, really do.
That's cool.
I'll have to shoot this picture to you, and maybe it'd even be worthy of getting put on the the feed here. I just have to find it.
Well, and I wanted to say thank you for Anna for calling.
Absolutely.
She's in Oxford, and we all, I'm sure, have been curious how she's doing. And she said everything's okay. And
that's great.
Doing fine, but it's definitely been a rough one up there. Her being from Chicago, this is not as bad, I'm sure, as...
No, she said this was worse than what she had experienced in Chicago.
Yeah, this was my thinking. Being from Chicago, this wouldn't be as bad, but as she stated... people don't quite understand the devastation if you haven't, been there firsthand. We have been very fortunate to have listeners and images and people and covering the stories. But, man, a lot. I know Oxford's gotten a lot of it, but that's a concentration of people living there. But it's been absolutely devastating across the state.
Absolutely. One of the things that people up north don't realize, and when they talk about, well, we've got weather that cold. Yes, you do. But the trees in the far north are used to snow. They are adapted over millions of years to being in these kinds of cold situations. Their branches, that's why Christmas trees' branches poke down, because they're used to having all that snow on them. They've adapted to that. Our pines and our trees are reaching upward, and when that ice and snow hits them, it just breaks it off.
Well, it seemed we had a lot of rain leading up to that, soaked those limbs, and as that froze, those things exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happened for several days, and according to Anna and Minnie up there, that was all you heard for 24, 48 hours was just limbs cracking and popping. Very spooky, especially at night with no power.
I think I just did this correctly. So sent you that eagle shot one of the eagle shots that I took, and see if that's worthy of getting put up there on the screen. One of the wonderful joys of birding, and if you get into photography to go with it, is getting to travel around and take photographs of some of God's most beautiful creatures. And yes, I'm talking about birds. We all find beauty in a variety of different places, flowers and trees and nature. And for me, it's been about the just myriad of colors that we have in the birds of our North American continent. And boy, I cannot speak today. And other places in the world. I've been fortunate in leading tours with students to go all over the world. And it's just an amazing thing to see the beauty that exists out there. Birds like the resplendent quetzal in Central America, phenomenal, gorgeous bird. But Lance, I sent it to you, and I think I sent it to the text line, the C-Spire text line, the shot of the eagle that I took.
The one coming in?
Yes. That's probably my favorite of the eagle pictures. I've got lots and lots of pictures of eagles feeding on the halibut carcass itself. I didn't realize halibut got so big. I had no clue.
Yeah.
I had no clue. Well, you know, I'm a southern boy that just never travels to go fishing, and I order halibut at a restaurant, but I had no idea they were as big as they were.
Yeah.
You would think I would know more about halibut having taught zoology, but
you just know they eat good.
I know they eat good, and I understand fishing and fisheries, but I had just never realized how big they were until I was shooting the eagles up there, and that carcass was up on the beach. We've got just a few more minutes. If anybody out there would love to ask questions, we'll talk to you about things in your yard, bird questions, bat questions popped in today. We always get questions about what is eating my plant? Is it deer, squirrels, what? Those kinds of things. I want to remind everybody, it's really, really important in these cold snaps that we're having to make sure that birds have access to water and food. Bird seed is expensive these days. I get that. Trust me. But the guys out there need our help. And it's really, really bad. A lot of the seeds that they rely on have been broken off or covered in ice and are not available to them. And if you've got feeders out, you'll know that you're really getting hit up hard with the birds right now. They're probably going to be draining your feeders. That's because they need it so very much.
That's my question to you is, with all the limbs that have popped and broken and the habitat, obviously, for those birds, how will the recovery affect the bird population, and how will they make it through this without habitat?
It's going to vary species to species. They'll make it through. Numbers will drop depending on what particular species we're talking about and what their needs are and how they were affected. The populations are going to be shifting from one place to another. It's not going to be a cataclysmic effect. A single event like this is not going to have the cataclysmic effect that, say, the entire change in climate over North America would have. But it will have an effect on that local population for a short while. Now, birds have wings. They'll fill in and they'll find places to get food. But the ones right around your home, they need you right now. And they need your bird seed. They need your water.
Will corn – I had some corn out for some deer. I noticed yesterday they were really getting on the corn. The birds were. What is better, though? I mean, there's rice bran.
Black oil sunflower has the most fat content for them. And that's what they've got to have right now to keep their energy up. A lot of birds will eat a lot of seeds, but what is best for them and what they eat naturally – is important, and a lot of those natural foods aren't there. I did hear back from Jake when I asked about what seeds were being eaten by the dick thistles, and he said it was primarily the millet. And
really, yeah, millet. Yeah, I love millet.
Millet's a great seed for goldfinches and buntings and all of those guys.
The ducks have loved it when I planted in a slough or something, and it actually works. You know, it doesn't get flooded out before it gets to where it's the growth point.
But, right,
and they love the millet. I can tell you that.
I've not done any growing specific.
Well,
for
Japanese
that.
Millet's what I've used.
Oh, okay. I've not done any growing of anything like that. I primarily go watch the birds, and then most of the things in my yard are planted for hummingbirds or for seed-eating birds or fruit-eating birds, the frugivorous birds. I love that word, frugivorous. You know, we've got insectivores and carnivores and omnivores, and fruit-eating creatures are frugivores. Well, I'm hearing the bumper music kick in there. That means
that was a quick hour. 2 hours.
Very quickly. I hope that Nellie will have me back. Today was probably one of my most discombobulated days on the air ever. Thanks for putting up with me this morning, folks. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama. She'll be back with you next week here on Super Talk Radio.
Past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
State Treasurer David McRae has returned more unclaimed money and delivered more college and career savings to Mississippians than ever before. He's done it by making the state's education savings programs more flexible, benefiting students and teachers at virtually all schools, private or public, vocational or technical. He's making college and career savings and getting unclaimed money easier than ever. Don't let another day go by without claiming your cash or jumpstarting a career. Treasury.ms.gov.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.